We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf on the We Made This podcast network. My name's Mark Adams and I am one of your regular hosts for the podcast. We are currently working very hard on getting our Series 7 coverage sorted for you, but a lot of personal problems amongst our hosts has caused delays in our recording. So rather than make you wait a month with no episodes, what we thought we'd do is we'd put some... Well, it is essentially filler, but it is our hosts chatting about stuff. What we're doing over the next 3 weeks is we're having episodes of my other podcast, Right in the Childhood, that featured guest hosts from Shipwrecked and Comatose. What this means is it'll be me and one of the other hosts having a chat about something that isn't Red Dwarf. It'll be a chat about kids' telly instead. And I got everyone other than Kurt on, so we've got Matt, we've got Colin, and we've got Carl coming up over the next 3 weeks. But first up is Matt, and we're having a chat about Reboot. So while you're waiting for Series 7, we're hoping desperately that that'll be sometime in September. We hope that you enjoy these as a filler while we're working on it. So without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Matt about Reboot. Hello and welcome to Right in the Childhood, the podcast about kids' TV, nostalgia, and our memories maybe not being quite accurate right here on the We Made This podcast network. My name is Mark Adams and I am your host. And every month I bring on a friend, a colleague, or someone who's enthusiastic about a kids' telly show to talk about it. And most of the time, I haven't seen it. My guest this month is Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Mate, I love this show and I love the idea of spreading the love and having new folk on. Tell us a little bit about you and your podcasty background.
My podcasty background in the beginning, all the way back. to go really back, I used to guest podcast on a person we both know called Tony Black, who anyone who's listened to any We Made This podcast might recognize the name. He's the guy in charge of the, I used to like kind of guest podcast on him, his podcast ages ago, and I've had a couple of failed attempts at generic TV podcasts in the past, which never really truly got out of the way. I then had a two-run podcast episode, which was based on a podcast he did called Pick a Flick, where people would nominate films for hosts to watch and then they'll talk about them. And I had a backdoor pilot for a music-based one all the way back in 2015, which lasted two episodes. And then in 2019, I must have the courage to start again late 2018. And in 2019, launched Pick a Disc, which, aside from the Freudian slip of a title, involves guests coming on to talk about music or about albums, and basically introducing albums that I may not have heard of, which is very similar to this kind of concept in a way.
Yeah, and you've had me on Pick a Disc, and my choice was something I thought that you would have listened to a million times because it's wonderful. I picked Fat of the Land by The Prodigy, and you hadn't really heard that. And I think you kind of had a similar vibe here where you were flabbergasted that, you know, you're not that much younger than me, but I hadn't even heard of your choice.
I think I know you're not that much older than me, but you definitely would miss the boat, because I think quite a few times, a lot of the picks choices that you've made in the previous incarnation with Fraser, quite a few of them I've never even heard of. Or
now that's because I'm weird.
That too, but I still think there's probably, I still think the era of children's TV is kind of very, it's very kind of fixed in a certain point where like you'll have a certain era of shows that covers up to like a 5 or 6 year period. And then you get to like, yeah, the later child, just before the preteens, and you'll start to watch other stuff. I think I remember the day, I discovered that, oh, hang on, there is stuff on CBBC, because I was a CITV kid for exclusively for God knows how long.
Good grief.
And realising that you can change the channels.
I was a bit like that with Nintendo and Sega, but I don't think I was ever like that with telly.
Oh, yeah, I never watched CBBC for years. It was just like, Channel 3. I think it was the case that you had to walk up to the TV and push a button. And I think we just couldn't be arsed.
Showing your age if you're pushing buttons rather than using the flicker or what. Right, there's another conversation. I call it the flicker. And again, you're not from very far away from me, but what do you call the remote control?
The remote.
You call it the remote?
Yeah.
Right.
Flicker's just weird,
Mark. Flicker. Well.
But yeah, I think there's like certain points where you kind of, there's a part where you kind of like, you're too old to watch the first stuff that appeared on CITV. I mean, like, okay, yeah, I'm 11 years old now. I'm a grown man. I don't need to watch Tots TV anymore. I'm going to try it. Yeah, I'm going to like, but then also you were in it slightly later when you're at secondary school anyway. But then I think at certain points,
true.
At certain points you become a teenager and to be fair, you're too cool for kids' TV. At that point,
well, you tell everyone you don't watch it, but you still secretly watch it. Or at least that's what I did.
True, trueish. I think I discovered the PlayStation at that point.
Okay.
So it was pretty much, yeah, I'm not watching TV. I'm playing Final Fantasy VII again.
But we know each other mainly from podcasting together on a Red Dwarf podcast, which again, in a lot of ways, because it's very early 90s. We were kids then, we were early teens, and so I am surprised that there are still picks for this show that I've never even heard of.
Yeah, but the show we're going to be talking about is also kind of almost weird how it was scheduled as well, and it's one of those kind of things that was kind of like a cult classic type thing, and basically there's a certain point where when I was talking about a certain point where new episodes came on, and it was at the point where there was a massive gap between series 2 and series 3, as in years before CITV shown series 3, and series 3 had only showed half of series 3 and not the second half to this point, I don't think.
What?
Yeah, so I don't think we have mentioned the show we're talking about, have we?
We haven't. I mean, it is in the title of the episode, but what are we watching, Matt?
We are talking about the Canadian CGI TV series called Reboot.
So as soon as you announced that to me, that was what you wanted to pick for your choice on this show, I saw some images of what Reboot is, and I got it completely wrong. I thought it was some kind of nightmare, cyber zone combo type, like game show for kids with like cool backgrounds kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't. It's an animated drama, is that right?
Yeah, I'm assuming. So you don't know anything about it at all, is that correct?
Not at all. I've only gleaned that from what, you know, people have said when I said I was going to look at Reboot. I'd absolutely try and come into these things completely ignorant.
Right, okay, yeah. No, it's not that at all. I mean, there's a bit in the document that you send to guests that you say, if Mark has no idea, can you pitch what he thinks it is before you reveal it? So you thought it was a game show kind of nightmare type thing?
From the images, I thought it was some kind of computer gen kind of game show situation where you would probably turn 90 degrees left, go forward, and your sprite would move around and do stuff like that. It looked a bit like Lawnmower Man to me, the images. So I think that's where I got this from, kind of like computer gamey. And so it's not. So I'm going to go back and suggest maybe it's some kind of group of young people against a evil state sci-fi animated series. Am I close?
No.
Okay, so what is it from your memory?
So at the start of every episode, there's an introductory voiceover before the credit sequence, and it basically starts with a character called Bob, who's the main character, go, "I come from the net, from systems, blah, 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 to this place, mainframe." And basically what this is the general premise is that there's a guardian called Bob who comes from the internet. And what we are seeing, Reboot, is pretty much is set within like a computer system. So all the characters and all the CGI characters are kind of binomes or pieces of data that live in a computer system.
Right.
Yeah. So the character, for example, there's a brother and sister character called Enzo Matrix and Dot Matrix, which are puns on Dot Matrix printers. Yeah. So it's just much the lives of these characters in this computer system, and they are terrorized by perhaps my favorite villain from a children's TV program ever, in the form of a virus called Megabyte, who is voiced by perhaps one of the best villainous voices ever, Tony J.
Why do I recognize the name Tony J?
You will recognize his voice imminently. I've never seen The Hunchback of Notre Dame, but he's the voice of Frollo. Is that the villain?
He's not the fucking Hellfire guy.
I don't know, but he's got a very, he's British, he's a very, very deep, dark voice.
The evil priest who sings about raping a gypsy in Hunchback of Notre Dame. Holy fuck, that's where I know him from. But I love that film.
Yeah, so you'll recognise his voice immediately. And
right,
the voice, the presence, the character design, Megabyte is just great. And I always have the image. I mean, yeah, he's up there in terms of design and villain. He just about beats Lord Zedd from Power Rangers. And I'll tell you something, if Lord Zedd was voiced by Tony J, I perhaps would probably still be shitting myself thinking of him at any point.
See, I never watched the Lord Zedd era at all. I did watch a little bit of Rita Repulsa stuff. I know who Lord Zedd is, but I'd grown out of Power Rangers by Lord Zedd.
I still love the design, and quite it's one of those characters that I think when you see it on TV now, it's dated a bit, but the design looks really good. But there's a lot of kind of fan drawings where they've kind of Chris Noland Lord Zedd, and he looks fucking amazing. He looks like, yeah, but sidetracking a bit, but yeah, so that kind of level of design and villain type thing, Megabyte was one of my like favorite villains. And on a episode by episode basis, the voiceover at the start, when they mention that it ends with, "They say the user lives outside the net and inputs games for pleasure." And because what you'll see at a certain point in episode, you'll hear a siren going, "Warning, incoming game." And you'll see this like purple cube come into mainframe, which is the place it's set. And the job of the guardian, Bob, is to go into the game. And what happens is that the characters or the residents of mainframe get absorbed by this cube, become video game characters. And you then see kind of spoofs of video games or films, as you see the characters in Reboot have to stop this kind of silent antagonist who's actually someone playing a video game on a PC. But you don't see the live action stuff at all.
Right. I was going to say, is there any live action at all? And there's not.
No, not at all. It's like the first fully CGI TV series ever made. I think it might be the first.
Good grief.
Might be the first. I am not sure, because I think it was 94, I think. I think it was like 94, 95, I think it first came out. So it was before Toy Story came out, anyway.
Amazing.
Yeah, this predates Toy Story. So basically they have to try and stop the user from beating the game. And because early in the series, it's unknown what happens if a user wins. But it's always catastrophic for the system they're in. And for someone who used to play video games, all the time, it was a lot of fun, like where he's saying, oh, the person playing the video game is the bad guy who might actually kill all these kind of sprites or data from the system. So each episode they will be in this game. So you'll have like episodes based on a mixture of wacky races and Mario Kart type thing, where they have to race this character and stop him from winning, coming first, because if they come first, dangerous things would happen. There's an episode which is like a spoof of, there's like a golf game, like where they have to try and stop the user from defeating the like winning a golf game, and there's one Mortal Kombat and stuff. But that's not the main point of the episode. Sometimes I'll have episodes based on what's happening in the system, where you'll have the character of Megabyte try to take over it, and Bob has to stop Megabyte's latest plan or something. And then there's other villains that come out. There's a great villain called Hexadecimal that shows up.
These names, Matt.
Yeah, Hexadecimal being a pun on the hexadecimal number base system.
Yeah,
which is from zero to F. So if you think for anyone who wants quickly being bored to death, decimal is 0 to 9, which is 10 different character bases. Hexadecimal is from 0 to F, which is 16 base. So like you start the next function again after F, you go to 1. Yeah, you know what I mean.
You can see why you ended up being a guy who works in computer stuff.
Yeah,
that I don't really understand. If this was your jam, how old were you? 10.
Yeah, 9 or 10, I think. Yeah, so I was pretty much... I'd had my Commodore 64, and I think I would have had the Amiga 1200 at this point as well. So yeah, so I was kind of into the kind of home computing, the not console person. I was that kind of weirdo.
Mm.
I didn't have a console. I had a C64 and an Amiga. And from things and throughout the years, like the occasional kind of, when occasionally you have like people talk about it on YouTube, they'll say this character's name or this character's name. And you're like, oh yeah, they're all puns on. I mean, there's a Mr. Miyagi based style character who's the leader of Mainframe, which I'm kind of worried might end up being slightly stereotypically Asian kind of representation of the old sensei called Fong, who I think is very much a mixture of if Alpha 5 and Mr. Miyagi had did some kind of Dragon Ball Z fusion dance, you would get a character of Fong. There's also kind of your stereotypical kind of dumb henchman tropes, which you find in a lot of 90s comedies with Hack and Slash, who are like this red and blue kind of bumbling idiots duo type thing as well.
Right.
But it's more or less like the life of this computer simulation, this computer system, and you've got like little binomes that are like in the shape of they're either in a shape like little round balls or really really long kind of Tetris stick shapes, and they're representatives of zeros and ones, because every single thing that happens in the computer is based on electrical pulses, and they represent the zero and the ones, these little binome characters, which are the residents of Mainframe.
So binary.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, so yeah. Zeros and ones. Yeah, which is like the representation of the electrical pulses. You either got an on or an off, and it happens really fast. It's like almost like Morse code, but the density zeros and ones, and all these characters are in those shapes. You get kind of different, slightly different, weirder characters. There's a character called Mike TV, who is this really talkative comedic character.
Mike TV, wasn't that a character in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as well?
Yeah, I think it's Mike TV. I think it's Mike, but yeah, I think it might be a reference to that as well. There's a lot of kind of references to popular culture in this. And as the series went on, the series started to kind of grow up with his audience slightly and do things that I don't really want to reveal at this point because of the episodes I've chosen for you to watch. So I don't really want to. I don't want to potentially spoil anything. But this was like an entry for more kind of longer term techniques of storytelling that television was capable of, that like children had not been used to, unless they'd been watching serialized TV, like Teabag or something. But
Teabag. Fuck,
Teabag's,
that's another one.
Teabag's probably the wrong kind of show to say, but you know, okay, like I'm thinking about more serialized drama, but I don't want to get too much into it until after you've seen the episodes.
Right, okay. So do you think it was a fair cop when I said that you're the kind of person that this show would have appealed to, or do you think it's more that this show influenced where you went in your career?
Oh, no, definitely not. It definitely didn't influence me, but it was definitely something that... Because I'm pretty much always, like, obsessed with VR games since I was a child. I had I was either 4 or 5, and then that Christmas I had the C64. And, and just constantly played that and attempted to program in BASIC and failed. But the kind of idea of, like, systems, it's very 90s in how it describes and how it views technology, but it's not the 90s technology in fiction that you usually see where people thinking, oh, this is creep, this weird niche thing. It's written by people who seem to understand it, and from what I've seen in the past, like people who are a lot more into the systems architecture than I am. Right, we'll look at it, and it's like how kind of Futurama has quite niche jokes that certain people in certain specialized fields will get. It's kind of like that, where you get like where, and that's one of the things I kind of want to, looking forward to when I pretty much rewatch it from, you know, because I really want to rewatch it all the way through, is that I'm quite looking forward to start catching all these references to a kind of retro terminology or systems, because it's kind of full of references to that.
It seems quite sophisticated for a kids' TV show. And when you said it got all these names that are kind of linked to computer stuff, I'll tell you what it did make me think of. The names that, as you get older, you spot what they're taking the mickey out of in the Asterix books. You know, like Cacophonix the Bard and Unhygienix the Fishmonger. It almost feels like an update to that gag.
Kind of, yeah.
Are the names funny, or have I misunderstood?
No, some of the names, like, I mean, because I don't think Bob's referencing it, but Dot Matrix is definitely one, because Dot Matrix Printers is an actual printer. I think Enzo, I don't think it's actually a computer term, but you'll have characters called Ray Tracer turn up. There's a character called Mouse. He's kind of like a bounty hunter, and she wields like a sword, and she's kind of like one of these, like an old associate of Bob, and she's potentially dangerous. So she's one of these characters that people don't trust, because she might have been done like nefarious things in the past, but she's very kind of cool and stuff. There's a character called Andrea who turns up at one point, but the A and the I are capitalized in the middle of her name as a reference to AI. And there's all sorts of kind of interesting stuff as well. And again, there's a lot of references that I don't want to spoil, that I want to talk about yet.
I'm fascinated by this. It seems remarkably intelligent and sophisticated for a kids' TV show. And as I've done this show over the years, it has felt like we underestimate kids' telly and the intricacies that they manage to include in this. And yeah, I'm fascinated by this show now. And I'm not sure I was that enthusiastic before I spoke to you. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to like almost like deconstructing what they were getting at. And also probably quite enjoying the old school technology references as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah. And again, I think, because I don't want to get more too involved in about what happens, because there's like interesting stuff that happens after episodes I've picked, so I don't want to get too much into it. And I feel like, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how you feel about it after you've watched the episodes I've shown you, but there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens afterwards.
I think the clincher in this is with this new format, when people are bringing stuff to me, it's whether or not I want to watch more or not the kind of like the stamp of approval, I guess. And I'm cautiously optimistic that this might be something I might want to dip into.
The only issue that I'm going to find is, and I think there's a great podcast by Alan Sepinwall and Too Long Didn't Watch, where he'll have people come on. So he's had Alison Brie, he's had John Hamm come on, and the idea being is to pick a show that they've never watched and then watch the pilot and the last episode, and they'll commit to that.
Right.
So for example, you have John Hamm watching Gossip Girl. And I think someone picked, I think it might have been Alison Brie who picked Game of Thrones, and like it's quite interesting to say like they'll watch the first episode and the last episode, so it's kind of like this kind of, but like they have to watch the first and last, and they committed to it, and not like go back saying, you know, I really shouldn't do this now, but what's going to be interesting is that the episodes I've picked, I need to talk about them. But then if the only problem is that if you really end up liking this, you might be really pissed off about the episodes I've picked.
Okay. So what episodes have you picked?
Okay. So I can't remember how many episodes are in the first series, but so we're going to watch the first episode, and I can't remember much about the first episode at all. I just know it's called, in my research, I know it's called The Tearing. I do know that quite a few characters aren't in it. Quite a few characters get introduced later on in the first series. So I don't remember much about that. The second episode I've picked is actually going to be the series 2 finale. Can't remember the name of the episode. I think it's World Web Wars, or that might be the one afterwards. Now, it's technically the second part of a two-part episode, but the first part was kind of like a standalone. Now, peeking behind the Iron Curtain, what we're doing with this is that originally we was going to record this in one night, go back, watch the two episodes and come back. We're actually recording this a few days before the second part, because of scheduling stuff. Anyone who's not watched Reboot before and has a slightly more and has slightly more time and usually watch it, if you do watch this in between, if you can, watch episode 2.9 and 2.10, because 2.9 leads up a little to what happens in the season finale of season 2. But also, if you are an X-Files fan, you are going to absolutely love and flip your shit over what happens in episode 9.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't want to spoil why, but if you're only going to watch 2, then I recommend you watch the season 2 finale, because 10, 11-year-old me was like staring at the screen in disbelief at the end of it, and it's perhaps one of my formative TV memories. And again, I'm not going to say why, but it opens up so many different things about how TV works and reading into what around it afterwards. And it kind of broke my TV innocence over a long period of time. And I'll get into a bit more detail about after you've watched it. But it's one of my kind of key children's TV memories. And it's killing me that I can't talk about it more without spoiling it.
Right, well, there's one way to solve that, isn't there, Matt? So yeah, Let's get watching some reboots. Season 1, episode 1. Yeah. Season 2, episode 10. Mm-hmm. It'll be a while for you and me, but it'll be seconds for the listeners. So we'll see you in just a sec. Welcome back. We just watched 2 episodes of Reboot. And Matt, was it everything you remembered? Are you pleased that you chose this as your choice for writing the childhood?
Very, very pleased. Not as I remembered, because I started to remember things and obviously managed to read a bunch of stuff in the very short time that we had in recording, obviously not having several days in between recording sessions.
Oh, yeah.
I think there was quite a lot of I remember a lot of like the first season being quite episodic. And I think the second season started bringing in art plots. One thing that I completely forgotten and never realized was how much the second episode we picked was actually like the last part of a 5-part arc.
Right. Yeah.
I thought it was like the second half of like just closing off stuff that happened in the episode beforehand. A lot of the main stuff I kind of remembered. The bit that kind of stuck with me and is like embezzled in my mind is like the last 6 or 7 minutes. That kind of scarred me as a child.
We'll get into that when we look at that specific episode.
Yeah.
But one thing that came up on my research that I want to talk about, you probably know this, but did you know that the animators were the guys behind the Money for Nothing video for Dire Straits?
Yeah, I remember reading that ages ago. I completely forgot about it beforehand, but now you mention it, yeah, because it's the company, or at least the guys that formed the company, or involved, I think. I don't know whether they formed Mainframe, but yeah, it's like the kind of technology from that. So it's kind of building on stuff. But considering this is still one of the first CGI TV series, I mean, I think it makes sense. It's probably made by people that kind of knew what they were doing.
Yeah, exactly that. But it also shows just how far they'd got in just a few years as well. Because this is way advanced compared to the Money for Nothing video, which for the time was completely groundbreaking and shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's fascinating that all these people that were involved in that kind of progressed on to this pretty well-loved kids' TV show.
Yeah.
Should we have a look at season 1, episode 1, The Tearing?
Yeah.
And I think for me, like I said about the Money for Nothing thing, is that it didn't really feel dated. Considering its age, this didn't feel dated. I don't know, maybe not quite, but it's pretty close to something that would be acceptable for kids' TV now. Or am I not looking at... Am I being too kind?
Potentially. I might be slightly biased because, I like childhood love for this thing. But, I think considering a bunch of stuff that's probably a bunch of quite cheaply made stuff that's made now, I think you can kind of see how some of the technology, I mean, this was what, like nearly 28 years old, flipping heck.
Good grief.
I was about to say 18. I was like, flipping heck. But yeah, but, so like you can, there's a lot, particularly in this, the first episode anyway, you can kind of see a lot of static characters and it's only the faces that are moving and the fluidity. True. The fluidity is not as smooth, and it's something, particularly in the, from what I remember watching the third season, where they kind of they ditched the network and they're able to be a bit more freedom and technology moved a bit. And then the character designs looked a bit better, and like there's more animation, there's more shadows and stuff. But I think as a kind of like a like initial concept, I mean you probably have kind of like really cheaply made CGI shows that are on kids' TV that probably are on like a tenth of the budget this made, but with the same with the same look.
Yes, that's what I was kind of getting at, I think. And from what you were saying about the series, what's fascinating is that kind of mirrors something you talked about on the first half about Toy Story.
Yeah.
Toy Story, Toy Story 2, Toy Story 3, Toy Story 4. You see the progression in animation quality quite starkly when you're watching the Toy Story films because of, you know, they're like four or five, however long apart. You definitely see an increase in technology on the same or less budget. But Toy Story 1, I do think, again, there is stuff that's been released now that isn't as good quality as Toy Story 2. And this really did feel to me like this was an absolute labor of love, and they put absolutely everything they could into it and came up with something that was way beyond what could have potentially been expected.
At the time, I think there was a novelty of it being the first fully CGI TV series. So there's that novelty there. So he was kind of like, so it was more like the spectacle of it going, bloody hell. I mean, Toy Story still looks great now, but I mean, if you watch Toy Story 2 next to Toy Story 3, there's a lot, there's about 13 years difference between them. Give or take, I think. Mm. It's 2013, wasn't it?
Something, I know there's a big gap between them, yeah.
And there's like only four between two and one and two, but you can see a very kind of like stark difference in the kind of animation and the movement and stuff, particularly with the human characters. So if you compare, for example, if you compare Andy in like the first and the third, like
true,
I think Pixar had kind of got that human cartoon look nailed by that point. No, so they're more fluid. Whereas like if you look back at like Sid, I think Sid's the only thing that kind of dates Toy Story. If you think about it too much in terms of how he moves and how he moves, because he's like a very prominent part of that film. But I mean, if they kind of made that now, Sid will move like an actual human being.
Who knows? Toy Story 5, Sid could be the main antagonist. Yeah. You don't know. He could like own an evil factory of Chucky dolls or something.
That's your headcanon.
We're not talking
there.
About Toy Story. Yeah, that's definitely headcanon. But we're not talking about Toy Story.
Yeah.
What I think this got right was that it felt a lot to me like a cutscene from a video game. And I think it meant to look like a cutscene from a video game.
Yeah.
You know how I mean? Like, you've got those narrative bits once you've completed a level between each level of a kind of a storyline based game. And this felt great. This felt like something you could have seen on your PS2 at the time, you know.
So I think there was a game for the PS1, I think, for reboot.
Yeah, you're right, it's probably PS1, not PS2 if it's 28 years old.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, and they had like animated kind of cutscenes with the actual voice cast as well, and we'll probably get to the voice cast a bit later. But yeah, so it has that feel, so I can see that kind of thing, particularly as well. It does have that kind of look, it's probably a bit smoother in the video quality, considering the video quality of that's been lovingly I think it's like a non-official restoration that we watched, like a 4K restoration. It looks amazing.
I will stick that on the social media so people can watch it too.
Yeah, so it probably looks even better than it actually did when I watched it on like a massive like 20-inch big Hitachi TV that you had to walk up and push the button on to watch, and had to tune in with the aerial and stuff. So I think we kind of spoiled with the actual video that we've watched. So I don't know if you've watched. I don't know if you. And then if you, in previous episodes, you've had to watch kind of dodgy VHS rips or anything.
I've watched some dodgy stuff, but a lot of it is on Disney Plus that I've watched in the past as well. So they've had similar treatment to this, I think.
Yeah. But I think the quality of what we've watched kind of is pretty much probably how the creators envisioned people watching it. It's all very bright, very sharp, very textures aren't all there yet. Probably because they didn't have the rendering power to do that. But it, yeah, you can kind of see like the designs of the characters are almost there, and yeah, I can see them probably looking back at this and still being quite proud of what they did at the time.
Hmm. So do you feel like this restoration is a positive thing, or would you want to watch the original, slightly clunkier version for authenticity? What do you think?
Oh, this version, because I did obtain the whole series many, many years ago, but they were kind of low-quality DVD, quote-unquote, backups from the back of a truck, and I from including all the episodes that I never watched because they never aired in the UK, but I never got around to watching them because the quality of them was very shocking. It's not in a kind of like, oh yeah, it's just like VHS rips. It's the encoding of the video was very off, and like I'm assuming like clips of this that was uploaded to YouTube over the years were using those kind of things, and it's very very muffled sound and kind of very like very low resolution stuff. So part of me has always been kind of waiting for perhaps an official re-release on DVD or something. So having this I think it's Al's Replay, I think the name of the channel is, but whoever they are, they're my new hero.
That's a hell of a lot of a commitment to do like a fan version of this, not knowing if and when it might be taken down because they're doing an official re-release or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's illegal, but if you can't get it on DVD, is it doing any harm?
It's like abandonware sites that put on that like software to download because you can't buy it anywhere. The legality of it's questionable, but then if you originally owned it, you can probably download it. But if it's not available to buy, how can people experience stuff that's not available?
Yeah, exactly that. I was really just impressed by this. I expected it to be really, really just awful, clunky stuff. Like, we've recently covered Cyberzone on Shipwrecked and Comatose, which you and I do together, the Red Dwarf podcast on our network.
Yeah.
And I was expecting the animation to be as shit as the animation on Cyberzone.
Or basically 25 minutes of Money for Nothing style clunkiness.
Exactly right. And I was really pleasantly surprised by this. And I think it is still perfectly watchable by kids today, which, you know, I'm genuinely surprised by, considering how far technology's come, you know?
No, yeah, it still looks really nice. In fact, some of the characters, like when the technology gets better, because it came back for a season four, because it got cancelled in like 97 and then came back for supposedly a full length of season four, but that got cancelled halfway through. The character designs in season four, the technology is a lot more smoother, and the character designs have got more texture to them and look kind of weird. Actually, the sprite characters of like Enzo and Bob and Dot, their faces look very weird because you're so used to the smoother, less detailed versions. But the animation and the lighting is a lot better.
So I'm going to move on to talk about, like you predicted, the voice cast.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you full props. You were spot on. Megabyte's voice is, frankly, completely perfect.
He's my favourite villain. Like, he's my favourite villain. I said this before we watched it. If Tiny J had voiced Lord Zedd, that would probably be the most perfect.
I had a little looky at him. And after the guy who voiced Shere Khan in the Jungle Book died, he did all subsequent Shere Khans. And how perfect is his voice for Shere Khan?
Tony Jaa, I didn't know he did that. No.
Yeah, he didn't do Jungle Book, but he did all subsequent stuff that had Shere Khan in.
Yeah, but the voice, it's just that very voice, yes, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought he might have been Scar, but he wasn't Scar in The Lion King. I thought he might have been Scar, but he wasn't.
That was Jeremy Irons. But
yeah.
But no, but I say I've never seen Hunchback of Notre Dame, but the voice, yeah. Mega Boy's voice, and just the look of the character, just look at the character as well. He's just like, he's a character that's evil, not just, he's not like the, you know, the, it's a case where you see where people say, oh, he's a villain, but he's not really a villain, he's blah blah blah, whereas Mega Boy's just, oh yeah, he knows he's a little shit. He's a very he's a very domineering evil piece of shit who's actually quite dangerous.
Yeah, and I think he did remind me weirdly of Shredder in the kind of like really kind of intimidating figure, very, very kind of physical with a very distinctive voice. And even to the point where there was an episode of the Turtles where they had to align with Shredder very briefly. And he took that opportunity to murder Splinter. And that's kind of similar to what Megabyte does in the season 2, episode 10 episode we're going to be talking about in a little bit. And it really did make me think of Shredder. And Shredder was definitely one of the scariest things of my childhood. Mm-hmm. So I can see why Megabyte would have left such a mark on you.
I had the action figure of Megabyte, and I think I had quite a few of them. I had Megabyte, I had Hexadecimal, Bob, definitely had Bob. I think I might have I had Dot. I also had, I don't think I had Enzo. I had another character I won't tell you yet because it'll be after we talk about the second episode. But I definitely had another character who's like the best character in the whole show. But
the best character in the whole show, you had Cecil.
No, actually, I had a character who I'll tell you a bit more about that character in a bit. But
I loved Cecil. it was like quite serious kids TV science, and then suddenly, lol, comedy French robot waiter. Yeah. Brilliant. Cecil was great. Exactly the kind of humour that's just timed right. Cecil was amazing. I would happily watch a Cecil spin-off, and he was ace.
Cecil great. It's kind of full of all these kind of little side, like kind of like joke characters as the show grows. There's like all these new, because these new characters get introduced, and like for example, I've always quite liked Mike the TV. Mike the TV, who's like this fast talking kind of TV. Almost like the Greek chorus of the show at some points. But like I think Cecil's kind of like based on like an old Macintosh from like the 80s as well. And so that design's kind of almost like deliberate. I don't know what the name Cecil's from though. I can't think if that's an actual term used in, it might be a programming language.
Maybe. Do you see, I think a lot of these jokes that you were talking about would have gone over my head, but I'm actually okay with that. I think leaving nerdy jokes in for big time nerds, that doesn't affect whether or not you get them. It's just a kind of like a little bonus Easter egg for proper nerds. I think that's a really nice, subtle way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's quite, and I think particularly at the time as well, this was just the time where GUIs, and this was before, so we had Windows 3.1 at this point. So we didn't have Windows 95 yet. So like the vid windows where people communicate with each other. So they got the like little window top bar with the X icon so that they'd like communicate with each other by just popping up and like video chats.
Right.
Yeah. Which,
right, like Microsoft Messenger.
Kind of, yeah. So like, you know, so in this episode where everyone was like talking like almost like self, like calling people, and it'd be like a video chat, but it'd be a floating video and stuff. I mean, like, technically it's like way more advanced than Star Trek ever did in the original 90s run, where like you had actually floating video chats rather than just voice.
True.
It's a nice communication method, I think, but it's a nice little hint, nod to the Windows 3.1 GUI layout.
Yeah, and I think in a weird way, this can be used as almost like a historical piece now of where technology was at the time, and the gags and the references being almost like a stamp, a timestamp of history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the character of Fong is basically a reference to Pong, who actually then you have to kind of beat him in Pong to speak to him and stuff. And yeah, there's like game Megabyte is a name of a measure of data that at some point will probably be really, really small, as much as a kilobyte at some point. But yeah, there's just like a reference to a bunch of like older technology. I mean, dot matrix is after dot matrix printers. which I think is like, which is great. Bob, I don't think Bob, I can't remember if Bob is actually a term or something, I can't remember. But yeah, I think it's just like a nice, I think hack and slash, I think, are just slang for keystrokes. So slash is like, yes. Forward slash. Hash, hack, I think, is, I think, the, like an old term to describe the hash key for programming languages.
Right,
I think.
Okay.
I think it might be a bang. No, a bang is an exclamation point. A hack, I think. Unless hack is actually a reference to hack, as in hacking, but I think slash is definitely a keystroke.
Oh, of course it is, yes.
Like backslash, forward slash.
Good grief. I think what's interesting is that whilst it's consistently referencing current technology, it's clearly sci-fi as well.
Yeah.
And they've got some really good, what I would call pulp sci-fi stuff. So like the ominousness,
mm-hmm.
the ominous nature of warning incoming game is very kind of dystopic sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I was all for that. That's very much my kind of jam, that kind of sci-fi. And this is for kids. And I'm like, that's really good.
I mean, for kids as well. I mean, there's a whole thing that particularly the ABCs are what they call Megabyte's kind of army. It's a reference to the fact that Mainframe clashed with ABC. The first season aired on ABC, and they constantly clashed with the border standards and practices.
Right.
Because there were so many kind of scripts and edgy changes that were imposed on them before episodes could air. To make it appropriate for kids. So kind of as you go later on through the show, there's a bit more near the knuckle kind of humour, which is aimed a lot more for like the teenagers or something, like there's like for teenagers and stuff. But then they go very kind of really strange. I mean, for example, like I think the character of Dot in season one, for at least, they pretty much was forced to make her breast less, and I'm quoting Wikipedia here, they were forced to make her breast less curvy and form them into a lumpy mono breast.
Yes, I definitely wanted to talk about that at some point. So let's do that. I just think the mono breasts would have been something you'd have expected on, we keep going back to it, but the Money for Nothing video, because the technology wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost feels like it, forgive me, stuck out like a sore thumb. That they had, yeah, I know, right, that they had the mono breast and the older kids would notice that, and it would maybe be a bit hokey.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, they get more anatomically correct as Wikipedia say with season three and stuff. They're a lot more not risque, but they get more kind of like okay with some of the more jokes and stuff. There's a gag near the end of the third season where there's a song being played. And the rhyme, like, it sounds like the rhyme, end of a rhyme of a song is apparently supposed to say the word shit, but they kind of, but they replace it last minute with no, because, but they, and they can get, they got away with that with season three. I can't remember where they aired on season three, actually, but from season three onwards, there was basically away from, like, the British, the broadcast standards and ABC a lot more, they was able to kind of do a lot more kind of like cheeky, like more jokes that were aimed for the adults or for teenagers. Like, I think the idea being that, okay, if adults are going to sit down and be forced to watch this with their kids, they must at least make it more fun for the kids, for the adults as well.
Do you not also think to some extent that could be that it's the time has progressed and the young people that were watching it that were 10 are now going to be 14 and they're going to want that kind of gag?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So they're kind of advancing in maturity level as their audience gets older.
Yeah, and there's I don't want to kind of jump the gun while we're talking about stuff that happens in like post season two, but yeah, there's bits that like they kind of reference that as well. But yeah, I think there's still like a lot of gags, and I'm pretty sure like people who are kind of like are into like on your like IT or do it professionally or just always being kind of into that kind of information technologically minded will find so much stuff here, and I'm always kind of like I'm interested in retro stuff and IT history, so that stuff always fascinates me. I like if there's an IT museum somewhere, I'm one of those kind of boring people that will go, okay, I'm going to go around there. I mean, a couple of years, the end of 2019, I was in Cambridge overnight to see a friend who was releasing an album at his album launch, and they stayed overnight. The day after, before I went home, I went to the Retro Computer Museum in Cambridge.
Amazing.
Yeah, deliberately on the way home, So I went, I was in there for a couple of hours, just like typing stuff into a typing stuff in BASIC into a BBC Micro and stuff. So that kind of IT, the IT stuff, the historical stuff fascinates me. So there's a lot of the jokes and in jokes that I wouldn't have got when I was 9 or 10.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm getting there now. I'm like, oh, bloody hell, yeah, that's a reference to so-and-so. That's a reference to so-and-so. That's a reference to the computer club from like MIT and stuff. And yeah, so there's probably a lot more to enjoy from it as you're older as well, particularly watching back after all these years.
And I think that's the best kind of kids' TV.
Yeah.
It's stuff that has stuff that on a rewatch you can appreciate that you would never have spotted at the time. I think this also didn't put, even on episode one, not even going anywhere near the episode 10 of series two, but I do feel like it never pulled its punches. The user win is grim. And, you know, people get killed in the very first episode. And it does feel like it was clearly a statement of intent with that, as well as obviously world building. But I also wonder from that, did this directly inspire the film Free Guy?
Possibly.
You see what I'm getting at, don't you?
Possibly, I think. I don't know. Like, you can argue that there are elements of Wreck-It Ralph that probably come from here as well.
True.
Free Guy, I think. Possibly, yeah. I mean, whether it was like subliminally or not, I don't know. I don't remember reading anything about Reboot being an influence or anything specifically, but there is definitely quite a bit of crossover in that. And I think, particularly with season one, season one and some of season two, there's like different, the games are usually kind of like the massive pop culture references anyway. So like any games that kind of spoof other things, that probably got some kind of lovingly influence from this game as well. So like other future episodes would have like there's a like Wacky Racy / Mario Kart style game. There's nothing like GTA or sandboxy, but that was before sandbox and GTA was a thing.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, so but I can see the influence on Free Guy, I think.
So let's talk about the music. I thought the music was really good quality, but I also didn't think it fitted the theme. I would have expected the music to have been a bit more, I mean, this wasn't a term at the time, but chiptune-y.
See, then again, this is me growing up on it. The music's been a part of that intro, but I think my focus has never been on the score or kind of like instrumental stuff, which is weird from some of the music podcasts, but like, I mean, I can't sit down and listen to like score or kind of orchestral music or soundtrack music like our mutual friends Tony Black would do. He'll probably just sit down and put the whole score of every Bond film on and just sit down and listen to it. I can't do that.
I wouldn't do that either, to be honest with you.
I think the more focus is the voiceover, which is like has always stuck in my head as well. It's up there with the Quantum Leap season 4 and 5 Deborah Pratt vocal thing, in that like it's that kind of thing where you can kind of like almost do it verbatim, and like it does I think it does a good job at setting that, and I think that overshadows the theme for me. I think
I'm nitpicking here because I was so blown away by it,
mm-hmm.
but it just, the music did seem like, even though it was good and worked, that my brain was kind of like, it doesn't feel like a video game music, whereas true. Everything else did.
True. I think at the point, though, they probably tried to make it as grand as possible. And I think if they went with the MIDI-style chip tune look, it might cheapen it a bit. No, that's not me knocking chip tune, because chip tune music is great. But I think at the time, it would be associated with kind of like stuff you hear on a Game Boy. Like
yes.
A Game Boy and stuff. And I don't think, and you probably want to have something more grand than that. I mean, because you had the music capabilities of the Mega Drive was quite strong at the time with its sound. And with the PlayStation coming out, the PlayStation was able to do CD audio. So you want, so, and this would be coming out more or less at the time, just before the PS1 come out. So they probably wanted to be able to kind of have that like high quality music that they could, that CD quality music that we knew that games would be capable of. So yeah, I can see what you mean with like the chiptune stuff, but I don't think it wouldn't have been the best thing at the time, I think.
I think you're right. In a weird way, chiptune is more modern than this.
Mm-hmm.
Does that... Yeah, I think you're actually right. And I've been looking at it almost anachronistically that chiptune wasn't really a thing then.
Yeah.
All right, I'll buy that.
Okay.
The other thing that stuck out to me is we've talked about how its target audience was maybe, say, 10 or 12, but it would have appealed to older people with its computer in-jokes. But I also think the images are so interesting that you could sit a five-year-old in front of this. They wouldn't have a clue what's going on in the program.
Yeah.
But they would watch the cool images, and they still would today, I think.
Yeah, because you got the sprites and the fact that they're like kind of like a very pale green or different shades of green. You got like the character, you know, the Hack and Slash are very bright. You've got Megabyte, and I would talk about how much I love Megabyte's design to bits. But you've also got like on the general populace, which I think is also, it's, I don't want to say cheat, but they kind of struck gold with how to kind of populate mainframe. So you've got the kind of more advanced sprites, like, so you have your Bob, you got Enzo, you've got Fong, you've got Dot, and then later on you'll have
Cecil.
Yeah, you'll have Cecil, but then you'll have characters like Mouse later on, and characters introduced later in post season two. But then you've got like the binaries where you got the ones and the zeros. So I remember talking about like the kind of like the residents of mainframe are either sticks or round circles, which are like representations of the one and the zero for the data in binary, which is the one and the zero that you put in, basically powers any kind of process on a PC ever. And so, like, you got these really easy, like, very easy to do shapes that you can kind of like quickly change over to give some sort of different design to. So they come like, so they're kind of like unique, but they're very easy to do. And it must be, so it must be a lot less intensive on the kind of like rendering of that sort of rendering than perhaps the sprites are. So you can have like loads and loads of these different tiny little residents all over the place. To give like a feeling that the city's lived in. So like mainframe's like a massive city with a massive population, and they're all just like these massive like Tetris sticks or round balls.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, I really enjoyed this. I wasn't sure I would, I'll be completely honest, but I really enjoyed this. All right, let's move on to the next episode then. We watched season 2, episode 10, Web World Wars, and despite all the quite heavy stakes and ominousness that was going on in this episode, the first thing I spotted was a very, very good gag. Piccadilly Circus.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's great.
This program is cleverer than you think it is on your first kind of tertiary glance.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that. To the point where, before we carry on, did you follow what was going on?
Yeah, I think I got what was going on. And also, I thought it was really brave how little dialogue there was in the very early going of this. And it really added to the tension. And it was very clever for a kid's show.
Yeah, but I was going to lead up, because I was saying that this was leading up to, based on what was happening in the previous episode, where basically, so there was like, there's this like web creature that was attacking residents. And this web creature, I thought was appeared in episode 9, which if anyone listening went and listened to, I hope you enjoyed it. It was also a kind of spoof of the X-Files. So I'm just going to send you a quick picture in the chat, Mark. If you look at that picture, can you see that picture?
Right, okay, yes, I can see that.
So the episode was called Trust No One, and what you're looking at are the characters of Fax Modem and Data Nully.
Wow. I'll share that on social media as well.
Yeah, so Bob is kind of working with the CGI agents, Fax Modem and Data Nully, to solve the case of Mysterian Kings.
That's so naughty.
And do you want me to blow your mind even more?
Go on.
Gillian Anderson played Data Nully.
No way! Yeah. That's really impressive.
Yeah, that Gillian Anderson voiced, with guest starred in that voice, because she was currently married to one of an executive at Mainframe. And she,
that's incredible.
And she was actually a fan of the show.
That's so cool.
So any X-Files fans, when I said that I recommend you listen to, you watch the episode before, yeah, it's absolutely amazing. It also kind of sets up what happens, because this web creature escapes and goes into the web, which causes the start of this episode.
Right.
But yeah, and there's also a back thing, the thing where one thinks that the character of Mouse, who's this kind of like orange haired kind of bounty hunter with like a blade, is actually this monster, but he's actually, but there's a whole thing of that. But then it leads to this web creature escaping is what causes this thing. But I needed to point out just how much I love the gag of Vax Modem and Data Nully. And the fact that
this is a good gag.
Yeah, but they're in it for quite a bit of the episode. Actually, they're kind of main parts of the episode. So they both get quite a lot of stuff to do. Like Vax Modem gets his kind of almost Fox Mulder style, my sister, the truth is out there, like almost kind of over egging, kind of like they kind of take the piss out of that. But I couldn't, particularly since on the We Made This Network, our biggest show is an X-Files podcast, and I'm pretty sure for years I've been asking Tony to come on if I can come on and talk about that episode of Reboot on the X-Cast. I mean, I mentioned that for years actually, but yeah, so that leads up to Web World Wars, which is the season finale, which I've forgotten that the web creature in reading this actually shows up a few episodes beforehand and kind of causes trouble. So this was so this was like a finale, like the end of almost like a two hour kind of movie. Well, not 2 hours, but like
almost like Buffy, I think, would be the reference. You know, you see the big bad early on in the series,
yeah,
but it's only in the final episode of the series that you get the final battle. You know,
yeah, but it's less the big bad. It's like, oh crap, we need to kind of solve this thing that will destroy the actual town, like the city of Mainframe, and like it. And one thing that I completely forgot was like how much it was like an action sequence for a good 15 minutes. I was just there, I was sitting there watching it going, man, this is great. I'm pretty sure there's more stuff in it. There's a lot more character stuff that are in this, but the character stuff's very quick, and all the stuff I remember character wise is in there. But I went to have a look at how much is played on the YouTube video, and it was 15 minutes. I'm like, bloody hell, this has been like a sci-fi movie climax, more or less. There's just a lot of action.
That's what it felt like as well, to me as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it feels like the stakes have very much escalated much higher since the first episode that we watched.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely interested to see how we got there, because I don't know whether you did manage your gigantic binge. I did only watch the two episodes we were talking about.
I only watched the three, but I'm planning to kind of go through. I got a feeling that the first season might be a bit of a slog, because it's going to be all episodic, all the kind of interesting character development and arcs really kick in the second season. But I'm planning to go through and watch it, because I kind of want to remember how it all builds up post that. And you definitely need to watch the Data Nully and Vax Modem episode. But it kind of all builds up and kind of like builds up to all character arcs that have been building throughout the series anyway.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that I hadn't seen all these build-ups, but it did feel almost like a natural progression and a character development that felt organic and real for Enzo, who was kind of like this young lad in the first episode we watched. And by the time the second series was ending, he was ready to be a guardian.
Yeah.
And that felt like exactly what a kids TV show should be doing, you know, is progressing the youngster character into a more grown-up role. And that felt really natural, and it was really well done, I thought.
There's a bit early on in, I think, either season one or perhaps season two, where he gets upgraded. So in the first episode, he's wearing a t-shirt with 01, and I don't know, I can't remember if he was wearing that t-shirt at the start before he became a guardian, but the his shirt was where it was probably saying 10, because he gets upgraded. So he goes from 01 to the next part in binary, which is 10. So from halfway between this episode and the last one, his t-shirt design changes from 01 to 10 because he's been upgraded.
That's very clever.
Yeah, yeah. Trust me, there is... I don't know if I want to spoil it in case you want to watch it, but Enzo is the TV, this show's best character. Enzo in season 3 is fucking amazing.
Fascinating.
And I don't know if... And I don't know, I don't think I'll, I really want to, I, and I'd love to talk about that, but I don't know if I want to spoil it in case you're interested in watching further.
Right, well, this would normally be something we would discuss at the end, I think. But yeah, I am. I am planning on not hugely prioritising it over stuff like, I don't know, I'm currently watching Moon Knight, let's say.
Yeah.
But it is something that I think when I'm doing a bit of housework or I'm doing some kind of like admin-y shit that I need just something fun to watch in the background, I am going to actually carry on watching this. And I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting to. I thought you were going to bring me some tat that would give me a bit of a kind of like, oh, that's cool kind of technological stuff, but I'm not going to watch anymore. No, I liked this. I genuinely liked this. Yeah. And I am going to, I'm not going to prioritize it, but I am going to, I think I'm going to work my way through it.
Probably jumping the gun a bit, but like season three is 16 episodes. It takes about 15 episodes to resolve the cliffhanger. It takes most of season three to resolve what happens at the end of
Good grief.
Yeah. And yeah, because I was 16 episodes to split it up into four kind of blocks of four episodes. So it's in like two different four parts. And ITV only ordered the first 10 of season three and only aired the first eight. So
that's wretched.
Several years after the end of this episode. So this episode finished. Then we had to wait several years for season three. And then, but by then I was like in secondary school and missing several because of the school coach. And then they would finish halfway through the season and never finish the whole show.
Even for a kid's show, if they did that now, that would be utter uproar.
Yeah, and considering how much the end of this episode, which we'll get to a bit more detail in a sec, but considering how much the end of this episode and the end of this, the cliffhanger of this, kind of scarred young me for life. Like, at the time, I was like, what the hell? The kind of realities of TV, I was like, this was like 96, so 11, 12. I was starting to read kind of SFX and Cult Times and starting reading about more about like interviews with TV and TV writers and stuff. My interest in the behind the scenes aspect of television was starting to kind of really, really get kind of amped up at this point. So I was entering my teen years being kind of really into, oh, how did they do this? And the idea that the like I started to learn what the word syndication meant when I was about 12 years old because of the magazines I was reading.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and like the idea of like, oh, TV shows could get cancelled and stuff. That kind of, So this was like the first kind of thing that I was becoming aware of this because of the show. And like, it took me years to find out the information about the background of this because I didn't really have the internet at that point. So the kind of idea like of scheduling and the fact that, and like that the America used to have the TV episodes like months beforehand. This was this kind of like, this episode was kind of like my first kind of foray into understanding all of that, because of the cliffhanger and me not understanding why they didn't bring Bob back the next week and why there wasn't one next week and stuff. So,
so it was your way of dealing with your trauma.
Yes,
is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah.
So I did actually make a note here that the music was awesome. And I don't feel like chiptune would have worked for this particular episode. Mm-hmm. So maybe my chiptune stuff was actually a bit naive. And maybe, again, just I quite like chiptune.
Mm-hmm. but particularly as well, because a lot of it is action and a lot of the character work is kind of condensed but pivotal.
Mm.
Pivotal and like... And again, it's kind of like the relationship that Bob has with Hexadecimal and Megabyte and is quite complex, particularly during this second season, to the point where they have to kind of work together. It comes to a point where it's slightly more complex than, if you use the analogy of Shredder, I don't think that the Turtles and Shredder would ever have a relationship as complex as Bob and Megabyte would have, and Megabyte right. and other characters in the future. But again, I'm not going to spoil that for you.
And then, I don't think I want spoilers. I actually think, I mean, obviously, I'm looking forward to seeing how we got from series one to the end of series two. But no, I don't think I want spoilers. So thank you. So I'm going to be a bit more, I'm going to be a bit frivolous and say Mouse's hair was fucking magnificent.
Oh, Mouse is great.
But her hair. Yeah. It just made me think this is attention to detail. This is exactly what I would have wanted as a 12-year-old kid watching this, all the characters to look like. I'd want them all to be completely crazy looking because they're all computer game characters.
Yeah,
so it just stuck out to me, the hair. And maybe I'm just obsessed with hair.
No comment.
No hair, yeah. That's the point.
But no, I mean, Mouse is one of those kind of characters that comes in and disrupts the status quo a bit, kind of like again using like Spike in Buffy and and like, but she's a great character. She's got like basically like a kind of bounty hunter with a very southern kind of like southern American, like no southern accent, and like a sword that she's not afraid to use.
Yes, yeah. But to me, this did to some extent feel weirdly like Star Wars. The level of desperation and then the kind of like suicide mission at the end, it really felt very Star Wars-y. Would you say that's fair, or am I looking at it simplistically from a point of view of someone who never really watched the program?
No, no, not at all. I mean, because again, this is a show that wears its references on its sleeve, and considering there are episodes which blatantly reference like things like The Prisoner. There's an episode in season 3 which is so much basically not a rip off but a very homage to The Prisoner, where a couple of characters who I can't reveal are looking for a mysterious person called Number One.
Right.
Number One,
right.
And stuff. There's a Halloween episode where they go into a game and the user is playing a character who walks up with kind of the most CGI animated Bruce Campbell going groovy and winking at the camera. Amazing. and starts chasing the characters with a chainsaw. It's that kind of stuff. There's an episode where, again, look at Mario Kart / Wacky Races, and Frisket basically turns into Muttley.
Love it.
Yeah. So if you're getting references from other kind of shows, again, Vax Modem, Data Nulli, it's probably deliberate. So if you're getting like a Star Wars references, I think Stormtroopers actually, binome shaped Stormtroopers show up in the background in an episode just before this one, actually. I think they're just like, they're kind of like those little round binomes. The circle ones, yes. But they're like almost in the shape of Stormtrooper helmets. So you got walking Stormtrooper helmets in the background. So if you're getting any kind of reference, it's probably deliberate.
Cool.
On reflection, in terms of if we're going to go back on the kind of like the hindsight stuff, as a child, I never saw kind of the twist at the end of this coming. Well, it's obvious that Megabyte had plans and stuff, but like seeing Bob get shot up and not escape, I was like, I never saw that coming. As a kid, I was like, what the hell? As a 10-year-old.
Pretty heavy stuff, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing I didn't, because I knew it was coming, it was blatantly obvious because like Hexadecimal and Megabyte are pretty much talking about, we have plans, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh yeah, it's blatantly obvious they're going to end up, the planning to kind of stab everyone in the back because, but I don't know whether that was me just noting, seeing that coming, but the fact that he ends up pushing him through and then closing it and like trapping Bob and stuff, I was like, I remember as a kid, I was like almost distraught.
It is shocking for kids though, that kind of the hero dying, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it's or at least getting shot up into the web and closing, like, and not knowing what's happening to him and stuff and leading stuff, but that was just like a kind of like, I mean, you're automatically assuming him going like escaping and stuff, but there's a nice like little thing where Glitch, which is his little handheld like wrist computer type thing, which is like Sonic screwdriver style gadget, which gets him out of quite a lot of stuff. I don't think he gets used that often in the first one. I think he kind of creates a lamppost that Megabyte runs into in the first episode, but like I quite like the kind of like the thought that like Megabyte crushing Glitch is like, considering you had like about 20 episodes of Glitch being the Sonic screwdriver tool that gets Bob out a lot of stuff, having Megabyte crush that in that like visual is kind of like shocking. So like thinking, ah, oh, crap, how the hell's Bob going to get out of this? Oh crap, he's not. Oh my God, Bob, no. Why, Bob, why?
Yeah, and I think I vividly remember the destruction of the Sonic screwdriver in Doctor Who, and that wasn't even a character, it was an item. So I think it is quite kind of world changing when something like that is destroyed.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like it's got the hindsight of the kind of intelligence of the creators and the writers to realize we need to incapacitate Glitch so that Bob can't just use Glitch to escape. Yeah, and there's so he does that, and then there's that kind of really what wry smile that has stuck in my brain, where kind of Megabyte's lower jaw starts to move slightly out of sync with the top.
Yeah, I clocked that.
And that image has stayed in my head. And sometimes you remember things. Sometimes things aren't as you remember. Again, I kind of forgotten a lot of the kind of action-y kind of shootout bits between the CPUs and the ABCs. But that's evil smirk and him pushing the button and Bob going no and shooting off, that was exactly how I remembered it. That's how much it embedded in my brain.
Fascinating. And I think going back to the very first episode of this podcast that I did on the tripods, completely 100% clear memory of the opening of the tripods where the giant tripod foot lands in a lake in a medieval village. That was a perfectly etched image on my head. So I didn't get it from Reboot, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Isn't kids' TV actually quite remarkable?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Matt, it's been lovely chatting about this. I want to talk about a few other things. So I've already said that I'm going to give this a go and
my work
and watch some more of it.
Yeah.
Did you ever actually finish this, or will it be for you series 3 from episode 9 onwards? Will it be completely new to you as well from that point?
No, I mean, because I remember reading, since I had, like, years ago, I had the internet, so I was like, oh, okay, what happened with Reboot? And then read about what happened at the end. And
oh, so you read about it?
Yeah, so I know what happens, and there's been odd clips and watched. I've never sat down and watched it all the way through. I've watched quite a few YouTube videos over the years of, like, retrospectives of the show, where people are going through it and saying, like, oh, remember this, remember this. So I did start and skim through something on Netflix, which was technically a sequel series to this, called Netflix The Guardian Code.
Right, I was going to ask you about that, actually. Is the remake any good?
It's absolute bollocks. It is.
Oh.
It is fucking awful.
What a shame.
Yeah, it's the majority of it's like live action and mixed with, so it's Reboot mixed in with Power Rangers, where these kind of like school children like have these avatars and they go into mainframe they go for the web and stuff, and the main villain is Megabyte, voiced by I don't know the name of the actor, but if there's one thing decent is that the voice actor they've got is like 99% there emulating like the late Tony Jay. His voice,
right.
But they change the cat. So I'm going to send you another image.
Okay.
Because Megabyte is also the main villain. Well, no, Megabyte has been reduced to basically being the stooge of this hacker, and basically the guy recreates Megabyte and gives him a visual upgrade.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to like this.
It is fucking awful. And I'm trying to find the most grotesque version of it. Okay.
This will be another one that I will share on the socials, obviously.
Yep. So be prepared.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah.
That's so cheesy.
Yeah.
Disapprove. Right, well, I mean, I probably wasn't going to watch the remake anyway, but certainly ignore it.
There's halfway through, they go into mainframe and meet Bob and Enzo and Dot and... The best way to look into that is perhaps just watch a YouTube video of someone comment of like offering a review of it, because it's bad.
So what you're saying is that the reboot of Reboot should get the boot.
Kind of. It's not even a reboot. It's a continuation, more or less. It's kind of like...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I
couldn't resist.
Yeah, it's bad.
Well, Matt, what a joy this has been. It was an unexpected pleasure. I thought you'd picked some tat and you hadn't. So congratulations to you. And thank you for bringing Reboot to the podcast.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can probably find me currently just binging the whole of Reboot. Now I'm allowed to finally watch it. Thanks. Now I'm finally watching. But if you want to find me elsewhere, you can find me on my main hustle, which is Pick a Disc, which is where I interview people to talk about albums for whatever reason they want to. And you can find me on the socials under Pick a Disc, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. You can find the podcast on pretty much every podcast app you can find, so you can find me there. I'm also co-host of a show, which you might have heard on Mark, called Shipwrecked and Comatose, where we talk about Red Dwarf. So that might get referenced a few times in the next few episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm currently also one of the main hosts of a show called No Book Club, where we're going through Yellow Jackets. At the moment, we're on hiatus. Well, kind of on hiatus. We're releasing monthly special episodes, which are just hosted by me, going through. But if you're a fan of the TV show Yellow Jackets, you can follow No Book Club, where we talk about that.
Brilliant stuff. If you are looking for my other stuff, like Matt mentioned, I'm also on Shipwrecked and Comatose. And spoilers, the next three episodes, well, the next two after this one, are also going to be featuring Shipwrecked and Comatose hosts as well. So I'm looking forward to welcoming, well, all being well, I'm looking forward to welcoming all my Shipwrecked and Comatose hosts on as guests here as well. I also do Chucky Vision, which is a podcast about the Child's Play franchise, which is in a similar vein to your Yellow Jackets podcast, kind of doing monthly episodes while we wait for the next series of Chucky. And other than that, I do Geek Polymath, which is a chat with someone about a area of geekiness that I quite like, but they are an expert in, and that's also monthly. All of these are on the We Made This Podcast Network, and all of them can be found by searching for their names in whatever podcast provider you are currently listening to right in the childhood. So thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Right in the Childhood. And until next time, I need to come up with an interesting sign-off. Shit.
No one knows for sure, Mark, but we intend to find one. Reboot!
That'll do. Yeah.
Right in the Childhood is a podcast brought to you by the We Made This Podcast Network. You can follow the show on Twitter at RITCpod. The show's creators and hosts are Mark Adams and Fraser Summers. Follow us on Twitter at MarkAdamsHC and at SpiderPanTweets. The show's logo was created by Carl Bryant and the theme tune composed and performed by Colin Jackson Brown. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed being hit.
Do you like music, and do you like podcasts? Chances are you like music podcasts. Take this one for example, Pick a Disc. I'm Matt Latham, and every fortnight a guest comes on to Pick a Disc to talk about an album for any reason that they want to. They'll talk about the album as a whole, we talk about the songs, talk about any personal stories about the album, any if they've ever seen the band live, and all sorts of other crazy tangents. And if at any point any of that made you want to listen to Pick a Disc, then you can find us on your podcast apps of choice or on the Facebooks and Twitters and Instagram under Pick a Disc. We're also on the We Made This Podcast Network on WeMadeThisNetwork.com and on Twitter at We_MadeThis. Goodbye.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at WeMadeThisPod.com or on Twitter at WeMadeThisPod.